Hello everybody, and indeed welcome to Sammy Says. This is me, your host Sammy Shah, right here behind the microphone and behind the steering wheel. It is the 25th of September. Fuck it up every fucking time. Ah, damn it. It's the 25th of September 2015. It is also Bakra Eid. So Eid Mubarak to all my Muslim listeners and my non-Muslim listeners who want to feel Muslim for a day. If you're cosplaying as a Muslim today, then today is an Eid. The Muslims don't have, I don't know, how do you describe the Bakra Eid? Because, like, Christians have Christmas and Jews have Hanukkah, and Muslims have Eid, but we have two of them in the year. We have one earlier in the year and one later in the year, and this is the second one, and this is the one in the first Christmas / Eid that Muslims have. It's the regular one, which is called Eid al-Fitr, in which we, kids get money and everyone goes over to each other's houses and eats lots of great food. And then in this one, kids don't get money, but we still go to each other's houses and eat lots of great food. The only difference is that food gets slaughtered right in front of us in the mornings. So basically, for those of you who don't know, it's a holiday based around that Abrahamic fucking story. Is it blasphemous to say Abrahamic fucking story? An Abrahamic story of, what's it called? You know, where God tells Abraham, you know, him being the lead character in the story because it's an Abrahamic story. God tells Abraham that, hey, I feel unloved, so why don't you prove your love to me by taking your firstborn son to the top of a hill and slitting his throat. And Abraham, like all good fathers, says, sure, buddy. And wakes his son up and takes him to the top of the hill and lays him down. And then he closes his eyes because he can't bear the sight of killing his own son. Or clearly he can bear the fucking action. That's not a problem. And plunges the knife down into his son's heart and then wakes up to discover that God had replace the sun with a sheep, because that's what God is. He's a fucking prankster. He just loves that. God is into japes. That's what it really is all about. Reality is just about jokes, giggles, and japes, and that's what God was doing. And one does not know whether the voice came from on high, but I think it's safe to assume that it did. And a very confused Abraham went back down with his family and then ate a goat. Or the sheep or whatever. And I think the moral of the story is that, you kill your kid for a sheep or something. But what it has become is that once a year, in the Muslim community, Muslims get a cow or a sheep or a camel or a goat or any of those, large four-legged creatures and sacrifice them. Slice them up, cut them up. We get guys to come over to the house, slit the throat. And we parcel up the meat, and the point is that you then distribute the meat to the poor. You put it in poor people's stockings or however you want to. You break into the poor people's like wooden houses at night, their huts, and stuff their socks with meat is how we celebrate that. It is. It's a weird man, Bakra Eid. I am so grateful to not be in Pakistan right now, because that's the worst time of year. Because it's always hot during Bakra Eid for some reason. Even if it's winter, it'll be the hottest day of the year, or the second hottest day of the year. The hottest day of the year, as any Shia can tell you, is the 10th of Muharram. And then, that's a good joke that none of you are going to get. But the... what happens is that the entire city is, for the lead up to Bakra Eid, there's just goats and camels and cows everywhere. Everyone has like 2 to 3. It becomes like a dick swinging competition where people like buy larger goats and larger camels and larger cows. And I remember like we used to be, Australian cows were a big thing, in fact, if I remember correctly, because the Pakistani cows are kind of, you know what they reminded me of is when you watch a cricket match between Pakistan and Australia and you see the Pakistani players and they're all kind of slim and scrawny and tiny. They're big strapping guys, but they look slim, tiny and scrawny to us. And then you see the Australian players next to them, these giant grain-fed fucking Aryan poster children. From like the middle of Australia, just these bogan war childs who kind of come out and then get the asses handed to them by, you know, Shahid Afridi and Shoaib Akhtar and everyone. So the Pakistani cows are the same. Pakistani cows are perfectly well proportioned for the Pakistani appetite. But then every now and then someone used to show off and get some import, some Australian cows, which used to us, they used to look like, you know, have you seen that picture of Neanderthal cows or not Neanderthal cows, the Nazis during like the Second World War tried, I think, genetically engineering like the mega cow beast or something, like taking cows back to their Neanderthal sizes or their prehistoric sizes. Why am I saying Neanderthal? Neanderthal is human. Their prehistoric sizes, where cows were giant muscled fucking badass beasts of murder. And there's, I think the Nazis did it like to one cow or something, through selective breeding. And yeah, that's what the Australian cows used to look like to us. They're just these huge, mega ruler warrior cows who are now going to take over our lands and sleep with our women, you know? And we used to all go and like, I remember we used to line up and when we were kids and there'd be near the shops near my house, some guy would set up a tent. And by some guy, I mean this guy named Akhil Kareem Dedi. Akhil Kareem Dedi was the biggest businessman in Karachi. Might still be, by the way. Like, he was fucking phenomenally rich, and so he would show off his wealth by getting the Australian cows, and we'd all line up and just look at them. Yep, just stand there looking at the cow, marveling at the cow. How fucking starved for entertainment and wonder were we? We were marveling at a cow. But yeah, so that's what happens, is that everyone just buys cows and stuff, and we used to usually get a goat or something. And I kind of grew old enough that I told my parents, I'm like, yeah, we're not doing that anymore. What we're doing instead is we're just donating money to a charitable organization that will then divvy up, you know, buy a goat, cut it up, divvy up the meat, and give that to the poor. We're not going to do the, you know, enthrall and thrill in the spectacle value of slaughtering a goat, because that's one of those things that you kind of grew up doing in Pakistan and a lot of Muslim countries, is you slaughter the animal. And we're always told that, because you get the goat like a few days before and you have it and it's in the house and you kind of, and you know, you watch it from a distance and it looks nervous as hell, and then on the morning of, you go, come back from your morning prayer. And then we were told always that the goat is dying for Allah and therefore it will feel no pain. But the first time you see it happen, you're like, that goat's fucking feeling pain. Like, Allah is going easy on the painkillers then. Like, he can afford to stick a needle into that goat's back. It is writhing in agony because they give the man of the house, takes a knife and slits the goat's throat. And I, because my dad used to be on the ship when I was a kid, he wasn't there. He was always sailing. 90% of the time, I had to do that. So I was the guy who'd take the knife to, you know, the butcher would come to the house and he'd hold the goat down. And then I would slit the goat's throat. Like, that's what they'd make me do. And initially you're like, oh, that's horrific. And then you kind of become fine with it. And you're like, yeah, I guess that, you know, to each his own. But like, or that saying had no sense at point in this story. To each his own. And what about, like, had no relevance here. When in Rome probably had more relevance here. Two in the fist of a bird in the goat in the hand. Yeah, so I remember, like, we used to just do that, and then one of my friends, he had a cow, and they'd slit the cow's throat, and then someone would have a camel, and sometimes the camel would get loose and, like, attack people, and that was always fun to hear about, because I was like, yeah, good for him, good for the fucking camel, get some revenge in, go down fighting. And then all that food would then be turned into just the most delicious mutton meals, you know, and yeah, I used to love that. My favorite thing on earth was the liver, like just pan fried, seared, and it was delicious. But that was my holiday. But the problem is, the reason why I didn't like it in Pakistan at the time, other than the fact that I would have to kill an animal with my own bare hands, I have to slice an animal's throat while someone held it down and I was given a knife. I didn't have to wrestle it to the ground and then break its neck and make it sound like that. But the thing is that this city becomes disgusting because there's no proper cleaning services in the city. And so people just throw entrails everywhere. And there's just, for the next 2 to 3 days, the city is just a steaming mass of, you know, animal entrails and offal and and innards just piled up and flies descend upon the entire. It's just the worst. It's just the fucking worst. I used to hate that holiday, and I'm glad to not be there right now. I'm really grateful I don't have to put up with that shit. But yeah, that was that's the religious custom of Eid in Pakistan, or in Muslim countries as it is practiced. I don't even think we're doing anything right now. Right now is 9:30 in the morning, and I on a Friday, and I am driving to Perth from Northam as per usual because I have a photo shoot. It has come to this, my friends. It has, this. No, it's not a fashion shoot. It's basically, although I have done a fashion shoot, in my defense, there was a t-shirt line that launched in Pakistan years ago. I think this was back in 2009, 2010. And the t-shirt line, they had really cool t-shirts. I still have a few of them. They're some of the best t-shirts I ever got. And the t-shirt designers decided that instead of getting fashion celebrities and models and stuff, they would get like the indie people, the underground people that only have niche audiences, and kind of make them do the modeling and everything. So I remember they got like Zoe Vickerjee when she was just performing at open mic nights and kind of just doing the underground music circuit, and they got the guys from Four Man Show, which was like a sketch comedy troupe. And back when they were, this is again, they were not anywhere near what they are now. Like now they're a comedic institution in Pakistan, and they got me, and I was holding a dog. Like for some reason, we were doing this photo shoot on the beach, and I'm wearing a t-shirt and I'm posing, and a little puppy, just like a vagrant puppy, kind of trots past, and we're like, all right, let's put him in the shoot. And so like I posed with the puppy. And then we did the entire pose where it was like, Burt Reynolds, was it? Who did the Magnum P.I., I think. Who did the actual paid Magnum P.I., who did the Playgirl poster of him lying naked on a couch with just like a dog in front of his crotch. So yeah, we did that photo shoot as well. That was the only time I've ever been asked to model. And I think, I'm pretty sure that was, there's a reason why I haven't been asked back. But the... this one today is, there is a comedy gala happening next Friday in Perth at the Royal, His Royal Majesty's Theatre, and I'm performing with some of my favourite comedians like Janelle Koenig, and who I think is probably one of the best comedians in Australia that doesn't get the fucking due she deserves, because she's a phenomenal joke writer. And then there is Kieran Lyons, who's a little child prodigy of comedy. Joel Creasy is emceeing it, and I've only met Joel Creasy twice, and he hasn't been nice to me either time, but I think it's just that he's a bit standoffish, and it's alright. I'm gonna give him another chance, let's see. And not that he gives a shit, he's in LA hanging out with celebrities, he's fine. And I think one or two other people, and so they want to do a photo shoot today to promote the show, which is weird because I think from what I heard it's almost sold out anyway, but whatever. So now I have to drive down all the way to get my picture taken in a suit. And then I drive back. And that's it. That's my trip for today. And yeah, that's what's been happening. Yesterday I had a gig, and tomorrow I have a gig, and I had a few gigs this week, and I'm trying out some new material these days again, and yeah, I'm back into the swing of things. Rottnest Island, that was last weekend. That's what you guys haven't heard about. Rottofest, that was fun, man. It was great. It was Rottofest is when I cut loose, and I got there on a Friday, just a dance. I went to the Crap Rave music party that Thomas Ford runs, who is a brilliant, brilliant man in Perth, and who does cabaret and music and all that stuff. And yeah, I got there, I hung out with a whole bunch of comedians, we all got quite terribly liquored up, and then I did, for the first time since college probably, I did some weed, and not the, like, I'll tell you my history with weed later. But like, I did some weed, and then my mouth went dry, and the whole world started moving slowly. And then I got onto the dance floor, and I danced, man. Holy shit, did the rhythm. Gloria Estefan was right that night. The rhythm did indeed get me, and it got me good. Daddy did cut a rug. I'm sure I embarrassed everyone around me, but I don't give a shit. I'm too old to give a fuck. I spent a lot of my life being self-conscious about myself and who I am and how I look and what I'm like and on the dance floor and things like that. And I'm tired. I'm 37 years old now, and I cannot apologize to myself for the way I look anymore. I can't. I'm done doing that shit, man. I'm just, you know, if you can't handle me at my worst, then you don't deserve me at my best. If you can't handle me at my ugliest, then you don't deserve me at my less ugliest. I got there and I danced and I had a fucking great time. And then the next day I got up and I did 4 shows, 2 gala shows and 2 of my own one-man shows. And tried out a whole bunch of new material for the first time, and it went fucking great. I had a good show. The first one was a little rough because I was still working out the beats and the rhythms of the stuff and kind of working out what part goes where, because genuinely there's stuff I'd only done once or twice before in open mic nights. And then the second show, it all kind of coalesced into a coherent piece. And that was fun. And I sold a bunch of books, which was great. Merchandising. And then, yeah, went back and then, you know, proceeded to get liquored up again. And then the next morning woke up with the world's worst hangover and caught a ferry back to mainland. Drove all the way back to Northam for the Avon Writers Festival, where I gave a talk to a gentle audience of writing lovers. Just sweet, sweet old people sitting there listening as I, you know, quite hungover. I might even still be drunk at that point, who knows, expatiated on how to write comedy. And that was my day. I was done. One of the cool things that happened on Rottnest Island, a few cool things happened. One of the coolest things that happened was I got to try on VR goggles for the first time properly. The Oculus thing. I got to do it. There were some guys there and they were shooting for Oculus. They shot the entire gala and comedy gala. And I guess so you could see in 3 dimension what it looks like when comedians die on stage. And but I got to try them on. My concern had always been like, oh, it won't work because how do you put it on if you don't have glasses? But you can actually focus it, and it focuses really well. I got really sharp resolution, and it was cool. And first they showed us, like, I saw Cirque du Soleil thing, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool, Cirque du Soleil in 3D. I'd just seen Cirque du Soleil the week before, so I wasn't that impressed. And then the guy's like, check this out, and then he put on fucking 3D porn, and that was weird. I'm not gonna lie, that was fucking weird, because the first thing you do when it's 3D porn, because it's from the perspective of the guy, is I look down and I see that I have phenomenal abs. I mean, just the greatest six-pack on earth, and that took me right out of it. Any realism that I might have immersed myself into was ruined by the lack of a little bit of a pudgy man belly. Pudgy Man Belly, by the way, is gonna be the name of my next stand-up comedy album. And then these women are riding your gigantic cock, which obviously that is the other thing that takes you right out of it. You're like, yeah, it's not that big. There is no way mine is that big. And then you kind of look up, and if you're me, you get really bored with that really quickly, and then you start looking around, and so you look and see the bedside lamp on side table, and you look and see the other side of the room, and you can actually check out the room. You can look around and stuff, and I kind of, for some reason, I zeroed in on a split air conditioner in the background, because I was like, what a random little distraction, like, who art directed this? But that was, yeah, but it was still cool to do VR, and once that shit gets affordable, I think it'd be kind of interesting experience to have that in the house. And you know, play games with that or whatever. What have you? But yeah, weed was interesting, man. Weed was strange. Weed. I tried weed once in college. You don't get weed in Pakistan. You get hash. And so the first time I ever did weed was in college, and it was old school, where like there was buds that my friend buds by like the little weed bud, not like buddies. And but my friends, you know, rolled me a joint with the weed, and I smoked it. And I didn't like it very much, I remember. Just, I found it a bit mellow and a bit dull. It didn't do much for me. Mainly because I was spoiled by hash. That was it. In Pakistan, like, that's my drug history is very limited now, thankfully. But there was a point when I enjoyed the toke, which was, and it all started with hash, man. Hashish is what it comes out in Pakistan. I think my first time was in A-levels, which is high school, the equivalent of high school, 12th grade. I was with my friends, and there's a bunch of guys. There's always the stoners and stuff, and those guys were just hardcore into smoking up. And they were, you know, we're all at a friend's house just hanging out one night. And they're like, come on, you haven't done it. You got to do it. I was like, all right, fine. Make me a fucking good joint. And so one of these guys, he was the Picasso of hash makers, you know, of hash joint rollers. And so he told me, he's like, very well, I will do my greatest work for you. And he sat down and he made a beautiful, beautiful carved mosaic, fucking beautiful, pristine joint, which I then, it was so packed full of hashish that there was barely any tobacco in it. And the thing about I liked about hashish, the thing that really got me wasn't the high, it was the taste. I'm very taste-oriented. Like, I still am addicted to my two Red Bulls a day, not because I like the caffeine buzz that a Red Bull gives, because I don't get that anymore. I haven't gotten that in years and years and years. I can have a Red Bull and take a nap. My problem is I like the taste. I'm addicted to the taste of Red Bull. I haven't had my morning Red Bull today because my IBS is acting up, and that's probably linked to the Red Bull. Anyway, and too much information. None of your fucking business. And, so for me, it's about a taste, and hash tastes great. Oh my God, the thick coiling smell and that kind of rich massage under the back throat that hash gives you. And I smoked the joint, and I had so much that I vomited my guts out for like hours after that while they all stood around me laughing. And it was beautiful, just beautiful. And then after that, I smoked up quite a bit. We all did, man. That was like, this was 96, 97, and we smoked up a lot. Like, we smoked up all the fucking time. All you did was you'd go to your friends' houses and just smoke joints all day long. And it was wonderful. It wasn't bad at all. It really wasn't. Like, we functioned, we would say, one of my friends used to make the hash brownies, and we used to call him High in the Sky Bakery, because there was a bakery in Karachi called Pie in the Sky. It was a very clever pun. None of you guys are going to get it. Fuck off. And High in the Sky Bakery used to make these great hash brownies. And I remember the first time I had those, and I had a brownie. And he's like, look, these are potent, and they kind of sneak up on you. And I was like, nah, that's fine. And my friend Temur and I, we have like one each. And then like half an hour later, we're like, this is bullshit, man. This fucking nothing's happening. And then we have three each. And it was exactly like the scene in Wolf of Wall Street, where he has the molly, and it fucking sneaks up on him. And because Temur and I are walking to the shops, because we're like, yeah, we're a little bit peckish, we'll get a snack. And we're walking at night, and all of a sudden, we're walking in slow motion. And I turn to Temur, and I'm like, dude, I think it's it. And Temur's like, yeah. And we were gone, man. It was the best. It was fantastic. It was so good. I miss it. I genuinely miss it a lot. And then from that, we graduated to ketamine. That was the one, the Special K. That was the era of Special K. Because we were curious, and someone told us what it was. And ketamine, for those who don't know, it's a horse tranquilizer. And in Pakistan, because you don't need a prescription to buy any medication, you can walk into any pharmacy and just buy anything you want over the counter without a prescription. You used to just walk in and buy horse tranquilizer. And the guy behind the counter knew, obviously, when fucking four teenage boys walk in and buy like two vials of horse tranquilizer. None of us in Karachi have horses that we are tranquilizing. He knew, but he didn't give a shit. And he gave it to us, and we go home. And you go home and you put it, and it's, you prepare it like fucking heroin. Like, you put it, you pour some out in a spoon, and you cook it with a lighter, and then it turns into a powder, and then you pour the powder out into a white piece of paper, and then you roll up something and you snort it. And we didn't have $100 bills, we had 100 rupee notes, and then we snorted that. And the first time I did that was the first time I hallucinated badly. Like, first time I hallucinated probably as well, but man, that was not a good trip, because we were in my room, I remember, and we all hang out in my bedroom, and I used to have a Motley Crue poster on the wall. It was a giant Motley Crue poster, and I don't even like Motley Crue, but I am a shallow person, and it was only there for appearance's sake, because it was a beautiful poster. It's just this giant skeleton with a sword wrapped through it, like with his rib cage, and a sword kind of plunged through his rib cage. It was really ornate and beautiful and intricately drawn. And I'm talking to my friends, and I'm like, this is pretty cool. One of my friends, this guy Danish, he's on the balcony, and he's on the balcony waving his arms like a crow in slow motion. And he's like, man, this is the best. Just do this. But I'm not fucking waving my arm, Danish. Just I'm not flapping my arms. Just fuck off. I'm enjoying my buzz. And I turned around, and I realized that the Motley Crue poster was attacking me. That the skeleton had its arms reaching out of the poster and was coming at me. And the jaw had unhinged and was flapping towards me. And I just covered my eyes and started shrieking. And my friends kind of like, what? And I described it to them, and they looked at the poster, and they're like, just fucking calm down, you're hallucinating. And it did kill my buzz, it really did. And so I didn't try Special K for at least another day after that. And then, yeah, the next day, went over to a friend's house, did it again, did way too much that time. And then we used to listen to Prodigy. This is the era of Firestarter, Twisted Firestarter. And yeah, we put on the Prodigy album and we sat there, fucking zonked out of our minds on Special K. And I remember walking to the toilet at one point and splashing my face with water and then seeing my reflection in every crystalline droplet of water that was suspended in the air and just marveling at my reflection and then coming out of the toilet and my friend is standing outside and going, dude, you were in there for 3 hours. Like, are you all right? And I was like, wow, I thought I was in there for like 30 seconds. That's insane. Yeah, we did. So Hash and Special K for a long time. Special K then we kind of stopped doing because everyone started having a little bit bad trips. Hash was just a regular thing. And then we discovered the dumbest way of getting high. Just the weirdest thing. And it wasn't even high. Kids, do not try this at home. Do not fucking try this at home. But here's what we did. We didn't drink much, by the way. Like, some of my friends drank a lot. I didn't like the taste of alcohol. I just didn't back then. I tried it and I was like, I don't like the taste. I definitely didn't like the taste of beer and vodka and scotch and stuff. I didn't like any of that. I didn't like the flavor. So I was like, it's not for me. And but one of the things that we discovered was, I can't even remember who discovered this, was, all right, so you get down on your haunches. You press your back up against the wall. Yeah, so sorry about that. I had to pause it for a few seconds because I started coughing, or like uncontrollably. But yeah, you get down on your haunches, back up against the wall, down your haunches, and back up against the wall is very important, by the way. And you breathe deeply 9 times. So in through the nose, out through the mouth, deep breaths, oxygenating everything. And then the 10th breath, you take a really deep one, like the deepest breath you can possibly take, and you stand up, still back up against the wall, just pressed up against the wall, and you stand, you know, ramrod straight, and you hold that breath in your lungs, and that's important, keep it in your lungs, not in your throat. And then your friend or accomplice pushes against your chest with all his strength, just pushes against your chest, and the oxygen to your brain gets cut off and you collapse, you faint, you pass out. And I, now that I say it out loud, I cannot believe we were doing that quite regularly. And you would pass out and you would be gone for maybe 30 seconds or so, or like not even sometimes just 5 or 10 seconds. But you would have these long, vivid dreams, like extremely detailed stories with sagas and epic tales and character arcs and everything. And then you'd come to, and you'd wake up and it'd just be 30 seconds or so later. And we did the hell out of that wow, were we fucking dumb. In retrospect, Jesus, that was a bad one. Everyone had one or two bad experiences with that as well. That's when we kind of stopped. My worst one was, I passed out. And I had two friends who were really big, like bodybuilder guys. And both of them pressed on my chest. Because the first time we did it, it didn't work properly. So they're like, all right, we do it. And they both pressed against my chest really hard. So hard, I thought for a second, I was like, I'm going to go through the wall. And then I remember being in a dark room all by myself, alone in a pitch black room, and there's a tiny TV screen at the other end of the room, the far end of the room, and on that TV screen is Thundercats, the cartoon, playing, and it's the intro to Thundercats playing on a loop. And I'm sitting in this darkened room and I'm just watching the intro to Thundercats again and again. Lionel's there and he's going, Thundercats, thunder, 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 Thundercats, and that whole thing happens, and I watch it, and I watch it again, and I watch it again, and I watch it again, and I watch it again. And then I open my eyes, and I had four friends in the room with me at the time, and two of them are one of them is sitting on a chair shaking, the other one has a stick and he's kind of got it aimed at me, and the other two the bodybuilders are, if I could only describe it accurately without getting into cliche, but it does sound cliche, they're trying to climb up the wall. Because they, and they all looked frightened and horrified. Because what happened apparently was, I went down and I started thrashing about. My arms started flailing and my legs started flailing, and I'm just thrashing about. And like as if I'm having an epileptic fit or something. And they're like, oh shit, we killed him, we killed Sammy. And they're freaking out. And then I wake up and I am looking with rage, just pure rage. I am glaring out at the world. And they said they was the most frightened they've ever been. Like, they shat themselves. And then I just lay there, just glaring. And then I came to, and I was fine. And after that, I was like, I think I'm done with this. I don't know what happened, but I definitely, that was some primal fear, Edward Norton bullshit, apparently. And I never want to do that again. So, yeah, that was the last time I did that. And then, I think that was like during the college era, back when I was in Pakistan for holidays or something. And then I was in college, and in college, obviously, you do the weed a few times. And that's when I kind of discovered the wonders of drinking. And I didn't really do drugs much after that. I think I tried cocaine once or twice, and I right away realized this one's not for me. It made me too. Everyone went really jittery, and everyone went really talk fast, think fast, like that. And I anyway talk way too fast and think way too fast, and I felt like I would burn up and just. I felt like I would disintegrate, because the speed with which I was vibrating would pull my molecules apart. And I did that like twice. This was in college. I never did it again. And then, I haven't done it since, man. Just none of that stuff. I went back. I think the last time I did anything was in 2003, maybe, no, 2004, where I did a little bit of hash in Pakistan. And then I didn't do that either. For a long time, I was sober as well. Like, I didn't. From 2001, I think, to 2007 or 2006. 2006. I didn't have a single drop to drink or didn't do any hash or anything. It was just cigarettes for me. And that was just one of those, my body is a temple kind of things, which I'm glad I did. And then I think I joined Dawn News, and I started working with all the journalists, and we started doing some fucked up situations and seeing fucked up things and working insane hours and having an insane life, and we'd all drink, and we'd all have this thing called Thirsty Thursdays, when we'd all go to a friend's house and we'd all bring a bottle of vodka each, and then we'd all destroy that bottle of vodka, and then we'd go home, and that was my life for a while. And now I'm over here, and over here I really don't do much of anything. I mean, I definitely don't do any drugs over here or any of that stuff. And then I probably drink beer every time I go to a gig, and then sometimes I'll drink some white wine at home while practicing guitar or something. And I have my bottles of scotch that I collect, which I don't actually drink. I'm saving them all for a special occasion, and I have yet to have any of them. And that's been me. And then I did the weed this weekend for the first time. It was weird, man. It wasn't in a cigarette thing. It was in an inhaler. No, it wasn't an inhaler. It was like a little plastic box with a hose sticking out of it that you suck on. And like a little portable hookah. And it was nice. It was fine. I just didn't like the taste of it that much. And it made me slightly paranoid, which I didn't appreciate. Holy shit, that's the last time I smoked hash was, or like properly smoked hash, was in Blackfish in 2004, when Blackfish went on a tour, the improv comedy troupe I was a part of, and we all went on a tour, and this is 2003, we all went on a tour in Lahore and Islamabad to do comedy. It was our first ever corporate tour, and they put us up in a 5-star hotel, and we fucking wrecked it like rock stars, man. God damn it. We smoked so... We hotboxed... All of Blackfish climbed into a shower stall and hotboxed inside there, and then we smoked so much hash in the room that the people thought the room was on fire, and then superintendent had to be called, or the hotel manager had to be called, because the smoke billowing out from underneath it, and our eyes were red, we were bugging out, and that was fun, man. That was good times. That was when I was courting Ishma, And by courting, I mean, of course, nervously just circling from a distance, because I don't court. I don't know how to do that. I nervously circle from a distance until the woman gets so frustrated with the whole situation that she's forced to then make the move. I remember that. I think that was around the time when I last really, really, really did all of that stuff. And then I think 2 years ago when I went to Pakistan on holiday, a year and a half ago when I went to Pakistan, my friend Sajjad was there, my friend Esen was there, and all these guys that I haven't hung out with in a long time together in one place, and my best friends from childhood. And so we all kind of had a little bit, but it was just, it didn't really work for any of us. And that was that. But that was, that's weird. I don't know why I went down my drug history with you guys. And if this ever fucking makes it in the cops' hands, it's a work of fiction. Don't worry about it. No stress. Entirely disclaimered right here, right now. Anyway, you guys can find me at www.samisha.com. I put up new dates on my show, the samisha.com/dates. My Twitter at twitter.com/samisha, facebook.com/samisha.fans. Samisha@gmail.com. All of it is SAMISHAH is how it's spelt. And I got some really big news coming up soon. This could be the biggest thing that's happened in my life in a while. Not just career, but in a while, my life. It's one of those things where until it's all finalized, I can't say shit. I'm worried about jinxing it. But if it does, you guys will be the first to know. Stay strong, stay cool, stay sober. My name's Sammy Shah. This has been Sammy Says.